Marines, bye bye you. Give these fair hands a goodbye. Thank you. We'll see you again. Thanks for coming. Cheers. Bye bye.
All right, yeah, we'll be in touch. I'm in a car park with Tom Ballard. Welcome to the debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here, and I don't know what I'm doing, but we're in a car park. We're going up. It's going to be a suicide. It's a Thelma and Louise, mate. We're going off the edge.
It'll be an honour to die by your side.
Yeah, honour. Well, anyway, we've just both done a gig at the Comedy Basement, I suppose. What do you call it? Oh, there, exit. There we go. In the city of Melbourne, and you were great. You smashed it.
Thank you, Dave. Likewise, you were hilarious.
I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's been a while, yeah.
It's been a while.
Cross paths every now and again. Maybe last time I might have seen you was a Dum Dum Club live show kind of vibe.
Oh yes, we did a Dum Dum together. That's right. Yeah, yeah. But see, I haven't seen you do a club set. I reckon for ages. I reckon I met you at Spleen one night, which is a Monday night room in Melbourne. And you were very young. What age did you start again?
Well, I did Class Clowns when I was like 14. So, you know, bullshit. But in terms of actually, I moved to Melbourne in 2008 when I was 19 and started gigging around then. Yes.
Yeah, right.
So, yes, obnoxiously young.
That's young, isn't it?
Too young.
What did your parents feel about you moving at that age?
Well, I would have moved to do. I took a year off.
You would have gone to uni anyway.
Yeah, I would have moved to Melbourne for uni anyway. Yeah.
So you didn't go to uni at all?
I went to uni for 6 weeks at the start of 2009. Studied law in Monash University, and finished up after 6 weeks. Felt like I get the vibe. Don't murder anyone.
That might be a warnable kind of thing, like Hughesy did. What, he did computer science for 6 weeks.
First Hughes in my family to go to uni. Yeah. First one to quit too.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, fuck, there's no money in this.
No money in this in computer science. I'd sit in a lecture theatre and just go, I'd root her, I'd root her.
I'd root her. I didn't root anyone.
No, so it is interesting because you're from Warrnambool. It's punching above its weight in terms of population and comedians.
Oh, that's nice.
Because you've got like the famous ones like yourself and Hughes, but there's also CJ Fortuna. Michael Williams. And also there was that guy who got a sitcom up based on teachers called Sit Down Brendan someone. Sit Down Shut Up. It was on Channel 10. Oh. And he played the PE teacher. He was from Warrnambool.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, do you remember that? Probably might be too young. Oh, it would have been on when you were at school, I reckon.
Sit Down, Shut Up,
I think it was called, yeah, well, on Channel 10.
At some point I would have heard of every Australian sitcom ever, but apparently
you'd reckon, yeah, yeah, you'd reckon, but now why is this guy stopped in front of us? Like, is this like I've seen this in movies, the van's going to come up behind us and we're going to get carjacked, but hey, we've got a recording.
I really hope we get pulled over by the cops. Are you recording a goddamn podcast in there?
Yeah.
Sir, are you high? You can't operate heavy machinery.
Are you high?
Record a podcast, for God's sake.
Just putting my ticket in the machine. I want
to. This showbiz lifestyle.
It's impressive, isn't it?
Pretty good.
And I'm going to drive you to a party. Is that right?
Yes, I'm going to a cool party with young people.
How young are we talking?
Don't come in, Dad.
Yeah, I went. I know in the text message I said I won't come in because my dad used to come in.
What did he do in
well,
there?
Well, what would happen was that to pick me up from the party. Yeah. So, you know, 15, 16, you go to a party. Don't come in, Dad. Don't come in.
Yeah.
And then you'd be in the kitchen talking to some girls, trying to impress them or whatever. And then someone would say, your dad's in the lounge room. What the fuck? And he'd come straight from his scout meeting in his uniform. And he'd be there trying to talk to misspent youth drinking UDLs about the scouting movement and how they should join it.
Oh,
you know, like,
Lord.
Nah, you boys would be good in scouts. You'd like it. Very good. Very good.
I remember once my dad, I heard about this big party happening the weekend and I was excited about it. I must have been 16 and my dad gave me a lift to it and he arrived. It was supposed to be at this football club and we pulled into the car park and there was just nothing happening. There was all dark and lights and the party had been cancelled and no one told me.
Oh, what?
And I felt like a real loser in the eyes of my dad.
And so then Dad took you out for a milkshake or something or a hamburger?
He's just like, oh, all right, back home, Tom.
Well, that's probably before text messaging and the internet.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, it wasn't. Yeah,
absolutely text messaging.
You're young. Yeah, you're young. That's what I keep forgetting. Oh, my God. And I've been enjoying your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Talk to me. I'll probably get the title wrong. Talk to me like a six-year-old. Explain it like a six-year-old.
Like I'm a six-year-old, yes.
Like I'm a six-year-old. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember seeing you in a cafe. Oh, I must have been last year. That bakery, Babka, that joint.
Oh, yes.
Which is a great... got good food there.
Shout out, sponsor. Yeah,
shout out
the
to Babcast. Yeah. And you were saying you did this podcast and you I listened to the Arj Barker one.
Oh, yes.
Where he talks about UFOs.
Yes, Arj Barker, he went on the project once to talk about it, but is quite into the whole UFO, quite sincerely believes, or at least finds it interesting, the idea that there is intelligent life and the government is covering up the truth about those those incidences. Yes.
And he's known for smoking marijuana as well.
It's so weird coinkydink, that one.
Has he got any other conspiracy theories? Is he a 9/11?
Oh, we didn't get into any other. I mean, you know, often those beliefs group together.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very rare that someone's like, yeah, UFOs are being hit up by the government, but this 9/11 inside job thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's interesting for an intelligent guy, but. And I also love the Ronnie Chang episode. So on your podcast, you get people that are sort of passionate and a little bit politically motivated, kind of.
I mean, I've had a few comedians on, mainly because, you know, they're the people who say yes and get a bit. I'm interested in talking to comedians about politics and stuff, but they're maybe the exceptions a little bit. Yeah, I talk to, like, activists or politicians or journalists. Yeah, trying to figure out what I believe about politics. I've had a bit of a bit more of a political awakening over the past couple of years, so I'm just trying to figure it out in my head and talking to those people I find helpful.
Ronnie Chang, the point I got from Ronnie Chang is that he looks at Facebook too often. Because he keeps referencing Facebook. All these people on Facebook, you should shut the fuck up. Maybe don't look at Facebook. Facebook is one of those places that just breeds stupidity, I reckon.
He doesn't like people being overly sensitive, but of course, Ronnie is perhaps one of the most sensitive people in the entire world, and other people's sensitivities make him so furious with no self-awareness, it seems, on that point.
Did you grow up in a political family? Like, with your mum and dad? Your mum and dad were teachers, weren't they?
Yeah, Dad did teach for a while, but he sort of moved into human services, disability services and stuff.
So that's sort of a left-leaning field.
Oh, yeah, yeah. On reflection, they're much more political. I mean, obviously, growing up in a family, you think everything's normal, but, like, yeah, they were part of the union. They've been members of Amnesty forever.
Yeah.
And actually, that stuff kind of you slowly notice or is just in the background a little bit. And then when you start thinking about it, you go, oh, that's actually quite a big deal, and they clearly have things that they believe in and are passionate about. Yeah.
Were they sort of traditional Labour voters, or were they even more left than that, you reckon?
They certainly were in the traditional form of Labour, yes, but particularly on the issue of, like, immigration and offshore detention and human rights, they just can't.
More left than that. More left than Labour.
They vote for the Greens now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting because I grew up in a very traditional Labour household.
Yeah.
But working class too. So, and Dad believed that he didn't know anyone who voted Liberal.
Right.
Like, and Mum came home one day and said, "I think the chemist is voting for Malcolm Fraser."
Oh.
And, well, bullshit, he is not. No, he's got a poster in the window. Right, we're not going to that chemist anymore. He was one of those guys who would black ban businesses. But yeah, he was in the union. He was a trades teacher, but he was in the union too and in the Air Force. So. He was very strong, still is strong Labour. But see, he would never vote Greens, I reckon.
Yeah.
I reckon he would vote Greens. But he's anti-war, a war veteran who's anti-war, which is interesting.
Well, it's often people talk about the radical Greens, and then you start going through their policies with people, and they sort of go, well, yeah, I believe in that. I mean, yeah, the war on drugs is ridiculous, and of course we shouldn't be locking up innocent children, and of course climate change is a problem. And you sort of go, well, the Labour Party is not the answer to your problems, I think, at this point, anyway.
The Labour Party have moved very much to the centre. I was in Young Labour at uni.
Oh, really?
I went to one Young Labour conference, right, and this guy gets up and he debates another guy. This guy was from the right, and I just looked at him. I thought, this is the reason why I want to leave student politics. Bill Shorten it was. It was Bill Shorten.
Really?
Yeah, and he was a very good debate. He rang me up and asked me to vote for him. And I'm like, I wasn't even in a faction, but I said, I think you're in the right, aren't you? He's like, yes. Yeah. So I'm not voting for the right. I'm a lefty. And then what was bizarre at this Labour conference was it came time to vote for the delegates or whatever, and a busload of Sri Lankan guys turned up to vote for the right wing.
What?
Yeah, it was branch stacking at the Young Labour conference.
Where did they find a busload of Sri Lankan guys?
This happened a lot in Labour branches. Greek guys would all vote for the left, and then they'd find people. I don't know. I said, "What are you guys doing?" "Oh, we're voting for the right." We're all members. You know, it's like, oh, that's what they do. That's what they used to do. But also, then I remember a couple of years later, I was putting up posters for a comedy night in the Dandenongs, which is the mountains near Melbourne. I saw Bill Shorten sitting, working as the receptionist for the local Labour member, and I went, "There's that fucking guy." That's that guy again.
Yes. And there's the future Prime Minister of this country.
Yeah, there he is. So, yeah, he was very determined from a young age to be a politician.
Sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was during the Beaconsfield, you could tell from the get-go.
Oh, yeah, it was like putting on his bomber jacket. And even though he went to one of the most expensive schools in Melbourne, went to Xavier College. As I've said in my stand-up, he knows about the struggle of the working class. He missed a tram once. It was awful. Bill. Actually, you know what? A connection to... He got up and one part of his speech was, and we brought Triple J to Melbourne. The Young Labour. And someone yelled out, yeah, but it's shit. And, bang.
People hated Triple J even back then.
Well, no. The thing was, in Melbourne, because, I mean, I started off on Triple R, so we had a big history of public radio, Triple R and PBS. And so when Triple J came, it was like, oh, no.
Mainstream bullshit.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, you... I mean, Triple J is a great thing. You were on it for three... I looked it up. You were on it 3 years doing breakfast? 3 or 4 years?
4 years for weekday breakfast, yeah.
Gee, that's so Monday to Friday. And that's tough, isn't it?
Well, you know, how long...
I did it for about 10 or 11 years.
Jesus Christ.
And I've just been doing 2 weeks filling in on 774, the AM station in Melbourne, because Red Simons fell over and hit his head. Oh, so. God. So I did 2 weeks, and as I was saying on stage...
Was he looking at some Asian people and you're thinking, what's the deal?
Whoa! That's what someone said, was an Asian person behind him who pushed him. Because he, as I said to him, and I said this to him on air, at least now you've got an excuse for your outrageous statements. Because, he was embroiled in a controversy where he talked about Asians. Oh, God. Anyway, and as I talked about on air, when I started radio... There was no feedback from the listener.
Yes.
So when we did Triple R, I did Triple R Breakfast for 4 years with Kate Langbrook and Chris Hansis and then a few other people. John Safran, actually, who's been on your show.
Yes.
And there was no feedback. Occasionally someone would ring up, but even mobile phones weren't around a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
The late 90s, but not the mid 90s.
I was talking to Jez Hickey today. She's saying they've just started bringing in on Triple R Breakfast now. They're starting to get a text line going.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
See, you don't want to listen to the hate, because as I said, you start on a radio station now, they've got a text screen up, Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
And like the first day when I'm filling in on 774, like 5:30 you have to start, I get on the microphone. Oh, hello and welcome to 774, it's Dave O'Neill here. And on the test screen, first text, you're shit.
Oh,
yeah, fuck God. Off. It's like... But anyway.
Yes, and doing 4 years of Triple J radio, you got horrible things texted in, but... At the same time, some of the funniest stories we've ever got in, or some of like the most joy, or like literally feedback of like, I am crying laughing in my car,
or
I'm going to be late for work because that was really funny or interesting, or I can't, you know, like...
It's true.
It's like reviews or whatever, like you've got to take the good with the bad.
It's true, it's true, it's true, but you've got to ignore it. I mean, I said that what happened when Red Simons is starting back again, but he would come into work and sit next to me in the meetings and stuff for the last 3 days while I was there. And I said on air, because one of the dads at school said, that sounds like Weekend at Bernie's. So I said, this guy, Ben DuPont, he's a fireman at school, said that. And I said, I've got to say that on radio. So I said that on the radio, and a guy said, I just had to pull over on my push bike. I was laughing so much at Weekend at Bernie's. It wasn't even my joke. Was a fireman. But you're right, that's an example of a great text message.
Yeah.
Because the public can be so funny sometimes.
So funny, yeah. Totally.
You know what I also did today? Because I looked at the years you did radio, and I was, when I did Nova, I was haunted by certain songs. I still am. Every time I hear Pink, I break out into a cold sweat.
Oh, God.
What were the... Surely with the songs with Foster the People? Did you play that a lot?
We played Foster the People, yes.
Oh, the
so Curtis
thing,
yes.
Gotta run, baby, run.
Lords Royals was...
Oh.
Because often the songs I initially really like. I initially quite like Thrift Shop, okay, by Macklemore. When I first heard it, I thought that is a fun, quirky novelty song.
Yeah.
And then it just came to the point where it's like, I don't even know if I have an opinion on this anymore. Because it's fucking furniture and I can't...
Yeah.
I'm so sick of it in every fundamental way. Royals is still a pretty amazing song, but even then, now I'm just like, there's nothing in it for me anymore because it's part of my brain now.
Oh, it's like The Killers. I love The Killers' first album, but I fast forward through Somebody Told Me That You Were My Girlfriend Who Looked Like a... I heard that song at least 1,000 times at Nova, I reckon. It's interesting because some songs are overplayed.
You reckon?
Yeah. Men at Work's Down Under, been played too many times.
Yes.
It's lost its...
It's done.
Boys in Town by the Divinyls. And again, all these bands have a lot of great other songs.
Yes.
But in commercial networks, they seem to only play one song from some of these bands.
Yeah.
Rocket, did you play Rocket a lot by... was that your era?
Oh, Little Red.
Yeah.
Yes, that would have been us. Yeah, I think... Yeah, that... Because that was from the second album, wasn't it? When they got a little bit more poppy and a bit cleaner. Yeah,
yeah, they were good.
Rocket to the brink of dying.
Bit of trivia. Everybody lose the same. They went to the same private school as Bill Shorten, but whatever. It's one of my expert fields. What schools people went to.
Do you know what school I went to?
No, I know you just went to a public high school in Warrnambool, but I don't actually know which one.
Brower College, baby. Which was originally the Warrnambool Technical College.
Oh, wow, the old tech. And Hughesy went to the Catholic one down there.
Emmanuel, yep.
Yeah, and you've both escaped, so...
The one night I did a show in the main theatre in Warrnambool, which is about 500 seats in my hometown. This is a couple of years ago. I think I'd done 2 years of Triple J Breakfast or whatever. And we sold 80 tickets, maybe, not even that. And on that same night, Hughesy was doing a gig. The one night I do a gig in the hometown, and then Hughesy's like doing some dinner thing.
Yeah, some big thing somewhere.
Bastard.
Yeah, what did he fuck you up there? I'll tell you what. I'll probably do it on purpose. I'm going to fuck Ballard up. Here we go. Shame who's missed
I didn't root anyone.
Yeah, I didn't root anyone. It's tough growing up in Warrnambool, but you got out.
It's tough.
You got out.
You're a good crowd.
No, you're a great crowd. Don't forget
that. You're a great crowd. Says. Never forget that.
And so with, after Triple J, you did a fair bit of TV. You did Reality Check.
Reality Check, everyone's favourite show. Everyone remembers fondly.
Hey, don't worry, the guy that created it, he said he was bringing TV to the western suburbs. And guess what, they didn't like it.
Who said that?
John Casimir.
Oh, right.
He wanted to bring TV, because he thought reality TV... Everyone in the western suburbs loved it, and so they were going to turn on to the ABC to watch it. But as you know, when you do gigs, I do gigs somewhere, and they go, what shows have you been on? I go, Spicks and Specs. What's that? It's on the ABC. Yeah, I don't watch the ABC. Yeah. I don't watch the ABC.
You know, you try and be aware of your environment or your bubble or your limitations, but I do, yes, I find it hard to be like, oh, yeah, there are people just who would never watch the ABC at all.
I know you talk about being in the bubble, don't you? You love your bubble.
Love the bubble.
My partner says it all the time. I love my bubble. I love my inner North Melbourne bubble.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it's a mix of, like, being aware of it, but also being aware that, you know, we have built the bubble and there's a reason why we like it.
Yeah,
and exactly. I do think there are some good things about the bubble, like, you know, gay people are fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the yes vote's going to work because I'm walking around North Fitzroy and seeing posters everywhere, but perhaps got to remember that this is not indicative of the nation as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I think the yes vote will win. I can't see it not winning. I'm just really pissed off, and I said this the other day on radio on ABC, and saying that because I interviewed a guy who made a video, a gay guy from Brazil, and he made this great video about what is happiness. And I said, "What's your next video?" He said, "I'm going to make one about this vote."
Right.
I said, "Look, you probably don't know why we're having this vote." He goes, "No, why are we? Why?" I said, "Because of an internal conflict in the Liberal Party.
Yes.
That's why we're having this vote."
Yes.
Because really, they should just have the vote in Parliament and save the money.
Right.
Because it's not as if it's not going to happen.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like wearing seatbelts. The Liberals fought that too when when it was introduced, right?
Really?
Yeah, some of them campaigned against it. Oh, it's a lack of freedom, blah, blah, blah.
Jesus.
The gay people are going to get the right to vote. You can't get the right to marry. They're just going to get the right to vote. They're also going to get the right to vote one day.
One day. I'm hanging out for that.
So it just makes me
angry. Then women.
Yeah, then women. And then immigrants. I've got to be here for a few years and done hard work, though. Yeah. I don't want any of these. But yeah, it just makes me angry that it's wasting money. And of course, I talk about this on the ABC, and people are texting you. You can't say that. You just gave an opinion. That. Where's the other side? Where's the no side?
You know, Hitler had some pretty good ideas when it came. Do you hear about that?
Yeah, Hitler. Yeah, you know, Hitler. As I always say, Hitler. Hitler got elected. Hitler was elected. He was someone's local member. Can you imagine Hitler? Imagine ringing up Hitler, going to Hitler in the local office, and ringing up Hitler's local. I want to complain about the rubbish on the roads. Well, Adolf's a bit busy, but he's going to send some people out to see you.
Well, I'm not going to vote for you next time, mate. I've actually ended all democracy and the Reichstag's on fire, so I've actually seized emergency powers. I'm not worried about retaining your vote.
Exactly. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, maybe I shouldn't have rung Hitler's local office and complained. Apparently, I'm first on the list. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, the vote is... you did some great stuff about the vote tonight on stage. It was very funny. Do you find it... I mean, you're known for being very political. Do you find it hard to make it funny? To make politics funny?
No, I don't think it's that so much as, like, making it interesting, trying to not be a downer. I mean, like, you know, hey, politicians suck is pretty... It's been done a fair bit. But I do... I really like trying to pick something out about politics and maybe... Being angry about something generally leads to comedy. I think most jokes start with there's something wrong in the world that annoys me, and so I'm going to get to this point. And, yeah, so if you look at politics, there's plenty to choose from there. It's just finding the balance of, like, okay, what are actually people know about? How much... Yes. What sorts of issue knowledge that you can make jokes about?
Yeah, because it's interesting, because you mentioned Barnaby Joyce, so most people would know Barnaby Joyce.
Sure.
But I reckon there'd only be about 5 politicians that people would know, generally.
This is what people say, yeah, if you stop Abbott, anyone on the street, yeah.
Abbott, Turnbull, Shorten, Pauline, Barnaby Joyce. Who else would they know? They might know a few more, but...
Like Rudd, yeah, previous prime ministers or whatever, yeah.
They know Rudd and stuff.
But,
so that's the challenge. But, I mean, I assume, though, when you do... festival shows, you get people that come along that are a bit more informed and want to hear that sort of stuff.
I think at this point now, yeah, I think for my shows anyway, yes, I hope there's enough of that. But I also, like, you know, there are some political comedians who are literally sort of talking about the ins and outs of what's happening in Canberra, whereas the political comedy I like is a bit more about...
You do it
like I did a bit tonight about, you know, rich, you know, just rich people are in power. And,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like... More about the system and stuff that's true, no matter...
Yeah.
You know, not that it happened 2 weeks ago, but just the whole system of the way that wealthy people just
and
get to rule.
Your great joke about... It seemed like improv, but as Malcolm Turnbull walked down to the basement comedy club, he would go, it's like that scene in the Titanic when people are dancing and, the working class have got a bit of entertainment going. This is a... Yeah, but I love it. The more you read about Malcolm Turnbull is that... Like, do you know he started his own bank? He started a bank.
Yes.
Like, what person starts a bank?
What's happened to you that you started a bank?
You start a bank. It's so bizarre.
Right.
But as I tell my kids, you can't be too hard on him. His mum left him, which would have been a big... His mum deserted the family. It's quite sad. Anyway, let's not feel too sorry for him.
I feel like he might have bounced back a bit. Yeah, or he's got enough money to...
With all
lots of people's... parents leave them as children and they don't go on to support torture.
Yeah, very true.
I don't know.
Very true, very true.
I don't know.
And you're moving to... Are you moving to Sydney?
I am moving to Sydney, yes.
Are you doing a TV show?
Oh, this is all... This
you
is
can't
all,
say too
no,
much.
Yes,
can't say
still,
too much.
Yes.
Don't you love it?
Stay tuned. Watch the space.
Don't you love... I remember
Jamal... You can't be on it, Dave, all right?
That's why I'm auditioning on the... You'll be sitting around in the boardroom. We need some young, hip comedians. No. We need 52-year-old, overweight, white men.
We need tractor monkeys.
Yeah, tractor monkeys. Yeah, remember tractor monkeys?
No.
Probably the same guys. Randley. He was on Randley.
Oh.
I did a gig in prison the other day. I don't know if I've told the story before on the podcast, but the only person who's ever asked me about Randley was a prisoner. This young guy goes, I've got a question. When's Randley coming back?
Oh.
So, mate, Randley's not coming back, good on you. They watch a lot of TV in prison.
Well, I did a gig in a prison in Perth, a lot of Indigenous dudes, and they'd watched First Contact, which is a show I did last year on SBS, and then I did some comedy, and this guy came up to me, he's like, oh, yeah, I've seen you on Up Late, and I know, like, that Nath Valvo guy. Like, he knew all these comedians.
Yeah,
like,
that's interesting.
Man, you'll really cross it. And he goes, yeah, I'm in most nights, so.
yeah, exactly. They watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
How was the gig in the prison? See, I've never talked to anyone else. I think I've gone too far.
You have gone a little bit, that's
far,
right.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's right, no worries.
Shit Uber driver. How was the gig in prison?
It was so weird, but it was really great.
It's very rewarding, actually.
Yeah, really rewarding. No, I found it was, one of those moments when you feel like comedy is actually doing something and making a difference.
Yeah.
You're not just performing to comfortable middle-class people who are there for entertainment. These guys are like, this is a really big deal.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't heard of you, even though you're a gay dude who's doing jokes about being gay and I can't relate to this at all because I'm an Indigenous dude who's locked up, you know, in prison because of cycles of disadvantage and horrible social forces.
Yeah.
It just meant a lot to them, you know?
Yeah, because I was quite worried because another comic, Brad Oakes, had done Pentridge in the '90s, and he said, "Oh, they just yelled out as you're walking along, 'You're my bitch, fuck you.'" And the guy, the prison officer, said, "No, it won't be like the Blues Brothers. They'll be respectful.
They left here, please.
They'll appreciate you turning up."
Yeah, totally. Well, because they know if they, you know, I mean, this is fucked, but yeah, if they're on their bad behaviour or whatever, no comedy will come again, and they won't.
Yeah.
There's still this awful punishment sort of system.
Did they have a microphone? They didn't have a microphone for me. I just stood there.
No microphone.
They got no microphone in prison.
No
microphone. Straight ahead. Here we go. How many people were there?
It was pretty good numbers, man. I'm flipping packed out. I flied a bit. Well, they had this thing called the Comedy Club where they've had other bit. Will Anderson did it too when he was in town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was amazing, actually. It was really moving. Talk to them afterwards, too. You know,
they were coming up and hugging me. As Hughesy said, at any point, could one of them stabbed you or bashed you? I said, mate, at every point. I didn't even see a gun. The prison officer goes, "No, we don't have guns.
Yeah,
they're locked away. We have walkie-talkies." What I love when I did... So I did a prison where they're all blokes, obviously.
Yeah.
And they were all pissing themselves. And then there was one female prison guard just sitting up the front, just shaking her head.
Oh, God. Like, yeah, I think they were like... Initially, they're like, "Oh, don't swear," or whatever.
Oh, God, I swear.
And then I was like, "No, I'm going to be swearing."
You got to be swearing. It's a prison.
And then they were so sort of... They were sort of... I mean, they're all young dudes as well.
Yeah, I had older guys too, but...
Just a little bit further down.
A bit further down, okay. Yeah. I'm driving Tom to a party.
Thanks, Dave.
How long did you do in the prison?
Well, this is
4 months.
Life, get less than murder.
Good behaviour.
Yes, I did about 10 minutes, then we did some Q&A stuff. And
Yeah,
it's
sure.
sort of, you know, it was comedy, but it was weird, and then I started talking to some people in the crowd, and then that was really funny, because they couldn't believe it, that someone was being so cheeky.
Yeah, in prison, yeah.
But I remember, and I haven't followed up on this, but it made me definitely want to do more gigs, and I think we've got to rethink the way we think about prisons. And,
you want them to come out better, not worse.
Totally,
think about prisons.
And the amount of suspicion anywhere here is good, thank you.
Oh, anyway, here is good. Hang on, I'll pull over. You're listening to The Debrief with Dave O'Neill and my guest Tom Ballard. Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app, and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. And Homie, they're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address, and of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homie.com.au. Okay, back to the program. You're back on The Debrief with Dave O'Neill, Tom Ballard. We've reached the party address. How many? I can't hear any music. It's not going to be like... I'm not going to be like your dad in Warrnambool. There's no party. You haven't been told it's been cancelled.
Oh, no! They didn't tell me! Heartbreaking.
What sort of party will it be? Is it like dancing or just standing around, do you reckon?
Look, there are a lot of homosexuals there. I couldn't imagine. We'll probably just be sitting around, you know, reading the Bible and just thinking about obeying all rules when it comes to illicit drug use. I think that's probably what we'll be focusing on.
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah. I could, Christian homosexual meeting. That's right.
Pray the gay away, yeah.
Now, I've got some questions for The Debrief. I downloaded these from the internet. What went well tonight and why, Tom, in the gig?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
What I really enjoyed was doing that sort of gay marriage material. So I opened up by talking about the proposal survey.
Yes.
Which, you know, that gay marriage... The kind of, you know, straight people do gross things in bed as well. It's been kicking around in my.
So you've never done that before?
No, I've done that a bunch of times. But bringing that stuff out now,
yeah,
when it's sort of quite relevant and fueled by a little bit of real anger about the situation, I found that very helpful.
That's going to smash for the next 10 weeks. It's going to be that. That's going to kill.
Say what you like about the postal survey. It's helped me with material. It's good having your rights voted on by the public. It really helps with grist to the mill. I enjoyed that. What about you?
Well,
do you answer these as well?
No. You're I can. It was they're a really good crowd. Actually, they were good. What didn't go well? Do you think, and why?
What didn't go well? There was I don't know. It was all that sort of the midpoint in the set where I did feel like they were a bit tired by the time it got to me. To be honest,
it's a classic point of they lose a bit of energy, you know. Like, and you, but you're very energetic on stage. You know, you bring the energy. So I can't see them. You know,
I did feel like the maybe it's the way that room's structured, because you got booths running along on your left when you're looking out, which I mean I think cuts off all the laughs you get from those people, really. Like, oh, the right hand side of the audience having a great time. I don't know these guys.
Yeah, it's funny how sometimes sections of the crowd go crazy and other sections you're like, what's wrong with? I often find myself playing to the ones that aren't laughing too.
Yes, yeah. Why worry about them?
Why do we do that? Well, yeah, well, that's you've almost answered the next question. What organisational hazards got in the way? And we can say the booths got in the way.
The booths, yeah. Well,
booths aren't great for comedy.
No, booths are bad for comedy.
You don't want to do a gig in Happy Days, Al's Diner. It's a very old reference, but I'm glad you know it.
No, I'm away. What was the song that you referenced today? I had no idea what that was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Luca on the second floor.
Yeah, that's a Susan Vega song. My name is Susan Vega. Susan Vega was a pop singer, folk pop singer in the... I looked at it, it's the late 80s. How funny was that? Because I talk about how I annoy my kids by doing lyrics from the... I didn't set it up. My son just goes, do you know Luca in my class? I go, yeah, Luca. Does he live on the second floor? See, people in my age generation, it was a big hit.
Why would you say that to your child? Oh, you didn't.
Just to annoy him.
Yes, okay,
just to annoy the fuck out of him.
Classic.
And then I go, yeah, my name is Luca. He lives on the second floor. You know, it's a song about a kid getting bashed, apparently, someone pointed out to me. But... I know, with that crowd, how funny. And I started doing the lyric and a guy actually said, no, Dave.
No.
A self-centering audience. No, Dave, no. My name is Luca. He lives on the second floor. Yeah, no,
I really like the Pearl Jam. What did he say? Something about Pearl Jam, he said.
Oh, yeah. When I,
then he said topical.
Yeah, topical. Well, the guy walked across the stage and I said, would you do that to fucking have a Pearl Jam
concert? Pearl Jam, yeah.
I go, topical. I couldn't think of a more recent band. I've got, at least I didn't go 80s, so I'm happy about that. Like, yeah. I went 90s. Any better? And how can we do better next time? That's the last question.
I mean, for me, I just want some new jokes at this point. I've just come back from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
How was that?
It was wonderful, but at this point...
That's your show that you've done a fair bit, is it?
This is my Problematic, which is my stand-up show this year. So at this point, I've done that about 70 times.
So you've got to put that to bed now?
Yeah. Just got to write some new shit, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay, new jokes is hard. What's your process for that?
I have a note on my phone that says new jokes, and I write down any dumb idea I have at all, and then eventually, normally way later than it should, I sit down and get the jokes out and sort of start piecing them together, and then trial shows I find very helpful and doing spots around.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it seems like that's a pretty normal system, I reckon, what you're saying.
There's no... and I still have no idea, even, you know, what is this, my 10th year pretty much of doing stand-up, I still have no idea when I get up at a night telling a joke for the first time.
And even
if people know who I am, or you get a little bit of grace, but generally speaking, if the bit, even though you think it's really funny in your head, for whatever reason, they decide that it is incorrect.
Yeah, when you think you've got an absolute cracker, and you get up and they just stare at you. Like, oh, anyway, that's a good thing about emceeing. Here's the next act.
Here's the next act. Now that I got you warmed up.
Yes. I've done my Suzanne Vega jokes.
Let's
no one
keep
laugh.
That energy going. Yeah.